This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. When it comes to terms of services, we as consumers agree to them without actually fully reading them. By agreeing to these terms of services, we end up losing our rights to our privacy, our information, and in some cases, even our seats. So joining me to explain why we should be more cautious before we agree to something is professor and nationally recognized expert in scams, Steve Wiseman. Thanks for joining me, Steve.
Great to be with you.
You know, after what happened with David Dow at United Airlines, you know, I started thinking about how we as consumers are agreeing to things that we may not, you know about. How is this possible?
It's very possible. And this is something actually in my media law class, which is one of the classes along with white-collar crime that I teach at Bentley University, I actually have my students look at the user agreements that they have agreed to in various social media. And they are often shocked at some of the provisions. And you'll see this with, as you mentioned, airlines. You'll see it with social media such as Facebook. Of course, with one of the things with social media, Steve Jobs probably said it best. He said, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And so you need to read these things. But unfortunately, we're lazy. And we go on to a website, and it could be also even to buy a tickets on an airline. It could also be to make a purchase of any kind. And we do this online, and we see that we have to click that we agree to the terms. And no one ever reads these, and they click that they've agreed, and suddenly they've given up their privacy. Suddenly they're going to be used for advertising. Suddenly they have limitations on their what they think the product is, particularly, say, how you can get bumped from an airline that they never anticipated but was actually there buried in the fine print. And one of my mottos is there's nothing fine in fine print.
Okay, so let's say, like, I understand this. I read the terms, and I'm like, I don't like this. But I still have to use the service. I mean, that's like I have to fly. I have to be somewhere in a day. I can't drive there. So, yep. I mean, isn't that unfair?
It is. But as John Kennedy once said, life is unfair. and then he got assassinated to prove it. But, you know, the thing is that the courts can make it better. And this is this type of agreement, as you very aptly characterized it, where you don't have any choice. You either have to use this product subject to the agreement, or you don't get the product and there's no place else to go, is called an adhesion contract. And in an adhesion contract, if there are elements of it that are vague or very, very unconscionable, the courts will not enforce them. Now, you know, this isn't something that is commonly done, but if there is something that is quite abusive and you really have no choice but to agree to this in the contract, there are instances where the courts will not enforce those contracts.
What can we do as a consumer to pressure a company? I mean, could we even pressure a company?
We could. I mean, I think we could do a lot better. These companies, and we're seeing this actually as rules are changing in the airline industry, they do respond to the public clamor. I think one of the first things we need to do is actually not just read these contracts, but demand of these companies that they make the contracts readable. In Massachusetts, it's interesting. There is a special regulation regarding automobile insurance policies that they have to be written in understandable English, and they have a test for that. I think the requirement of having contracts be less detail, less legalese, and more forthright is something consumers can demand and reward companies that do it, as well as really let companies know what we will tolerate and what we won't.
It's so funny because you're right, the legalese, the whole technical part of those contracts, it's like it's in there, but it's also incredibly long. I mean, and sometimes even the print itself is really small. Do they do that intentionally?
I am just absolutely convinced that that is so. And, you know, I'm a lawyer, and I actually enjoy reading some of these because, one, I look for typos. But more than that, I look for what I think really has to be in there and what is in there just to overwhelm the poor consumer. And we don't want to be overwhelmed. Whelmed, maybe we'll put up with. But there's a lot in there that people, they click, that they accept, because it just is so overwhelming. And, you know, even if you're a lawyer, and I got to admit, there are times where, like you say, I know I can't go somewhere else, and I'm going to click that I accept these terms even without reading them. Now, if I'm doing that, that's a bad thing. But we all should do a better job of demanding that these be more readable.
Do you think technology has changed the rights of consumers ourselves?
Yeah, because what's happening is, I'm always telling my students, technology is always going faster and further than the law, and the law is always playing catch-up. So we never had the ease with which a company could set up standards where you couldn't use their product unless you agreed to onerous terms that would overwhelm you. Couldn't be done before technology. Couldn't be done before the computers. We also have been spoiled. We want instant gratification. And, you know, frankly, right now, the technology, when we use various websites and what can be done as far as particularly invading our privacy and taking information about us and then selling that where we get nothing or little in return, right now is very, very much unregulated, and we need that to be more regulated.
I used to play a game called World of Warcraft, and you would create an account and you would pay, I think it was like $10 or $20 a month. And, that was cool. And one day I sat and I read the terms of services or terms of agreement for it. And it said that I didn't own my character. I didn't own the account. And I was like, wait, what? I pay for a service and I don't own it. And it turns out a lot of online companies especially tend to have that you don't own it. You may pay for it, but you yourself. How can they do that?
They go by the golden rule. And the new version of that is they have the gold, they make the rules. And yes, it is outrageous. There may be photographs that you put up on social media that you have agreed that they can use in any fashion whatsoever. It's a matter of selling where you are going on your browser. Our privacy has become tremendously threatened today, and the serious thing is we don't even know it. We don't even recognize that this is happening to us. We don't even recognize that companies are making money off of our individuality, and we're not getting compensated for this. And in many instances, like you say, you're even paying for something, and then you don't get what you think you're paid for.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they can get away with this. I mean, I'm always concerned about someone stealing my credit card, and in this case, it's like they're actually stealing me, and it's companies.
Yeah. No, it's a real concern. And this is something where, once again, I think too many consumers are just not aware of it. And I think that's when you have to go back to Steve Jobs. And particularly, it's easy. You know, you were paying a fee, but there are so many online services people are getting used to getting for nothing. And there are no free lunches, and there's no free social media. And so you need to really be curious and find out, okay, what am I providing in return for this? And then there are ways, usually it's very difficult to do, but there are ways that you can enhance your privacy. In Facebook, there are limitations that you can put on the sharing of your information, and in other social media as well. So to a certain extent, the companies will say, well, it's there, but they don't make it very easy for people to use or do they explain what they really are doing with our data, our information, and the personal aspects of us as individuals?
You know, besides opting out from the website itself, is this something you can write to your congressman to complain about, or is that kind of going to fall on deaf ears?
You know, it's hard to say. I think it takes a lot of us to do it. I think people have to first educate themselves about this. And then, yes, I think we can demand reasonable regulations. There are attempts to do this. But Congress isn't going to do anything unless they feel the people are demanding this, because right now they're getting paid and lobbied much more by the companies who are benefiting by a lack of regulation on this than they are by serving the individual citizens and consumers.
Well, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And for those listening, where can they find more about you?
Best place to check me out is scamicide.com, scamicide.com. All kinds of information about cybersecurity and scams and identity theft.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.